World Series. Hall of Fame pitcher John Smoltz played 22 years in Major League Baseball and is an 8-time All-Star. He shares with Fox News what it's like to be named to that All-Star team.
It's amazing. You know, it's like you get an appreciation for your peers, and it feels like you've checked in. Like, when you play baseball as long as most of these guys will play, there's an admiration level that's unmatched. Yeah, some guys would say the 3 days off would be nice, but there's nothing like putting on a uniform representing your city, coming against the guys that you compete against all year for one night to showcase your talents. You get announced to opening day. When you get to All-Star Game and get announced, there's something special about it. And so each league does have a lot of pride.
And regarding all the young people stepping up in Major League Baseball today,
there's never been more prepared young players to make an impact right away. And so I'm in awe of the talent. I'm in awe of their preparation, and they're not afraid of the moment. Any other industry that you would just step in and try to make an impact would be much more difficult, but they're getting used to it. And the good and the bad is they're playing so much young that they're able in showcase games to handle it. And the bad is it brings in a lot more risk for injury. So I sit in a booth. I marvel at the talent. I marvel at the power and the rawness that this game has. And it's in good hands when you think about 20-year-old, 21-year-olds coming here and doing what they're doing.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Welcome to Destination Hockey. Today we have Islanders prospect Felix Bibeau coming on the show to join us to talk about his pursuit of the NHL dream. But first, here is your live and local weather forecast. Tonight we've got low temperatures. It will drop to 60 degrees in local Hunterdon County. But tomorrow the temperature will increase to 85 degrees and we will be getting some heavy rain and thunderstorms. Friday, there is a chance of showers. It's transitioning back into nice weather. It will be a hot summer day with an 89-degree temperature. Saturday, we're getting those sunny summer skies with 89 degrees as the temperature. So that's your live and local weather forecast. We will be right back with Islanders prospect Felix Bibeau.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
The NHL salary cap, the biggest enigma in the league. Always there, always watching, but fundamentally misunderstood. And the Vancouver Canucks are perhaps the best example of this. Today, they signed Michael Ferland to a 4-year, $14 million contract with no movement clauses dispersed throughout the deal. On paper, is this the worst decision? No. Ferland is a very solid player. But when looking at the impact down the line, this could be deadly. In 2 years, Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson will need new contracts. Not to mention Brock Besser needing one now. This will be exponentially more difficult with $14.75 million committed to JT Miller, Tyler Myles, and Ferland just in this offseason. Three decent, but not great players. The Canucks need to find an identity. They are in a situation like this for a reason, after years of struggling to find a plan of action and sticking to it. Look at teams like the New York Rangers. I hate praising them, but they sent a letter to their fan base, traded almost all of their assets while they still had value, and executed a perfect rebuild in 2 seasons. On the other hand, you have Vancouver, a team that accepted mediocrity, reminisced on the glory days of 2011, and failed to address true needs. Now, they face a crossroads. Jim Benning has been allowed by ownership to make desperation moves that could hurt the franchise down the line. Tampa Bay will have their first-round pick within the next 3 years. To avoid cap situations like this, just use some common sense. Do not give Louis Erickson a 6-year contract. Do not tie up 20% of your budget to fourth liners. Do not give out $6 million per year to aging defensemen like it's your job. The Canucks have a passionate fan base, and I certainly wish them the best. However, the best is difficult to achieve when you are fighting two opponents on a given night, the opposing team and the salary cap. Welcome to Destination Hockey. I would like to welcome in our Facebook Live viewers who are just joining us and welcome in all of you listening live and also on our archived version. I am your host, David Lazar, and I am thrilled to announce that Islanders prospect Felix Bibbo will be joining me later in the broadcast, but first, let's talk about some restricted free agents. These are players that have special restrictions on the terms under which they can retain or change employment status with their clubs. In easier terms, their teams can match their offers. And this was made apparent on Sunday when the Hurricanes officially matched a 5-year, $42.27 million contract. What a bizarre, bizarre situation. Tom Dundon, the Hurricanes owner, is a very, very wealthy man. He is involved with many businesses, many investments, including a failed multiple $100 million investment in the Alliance of American Football League, which the NFL ate up within 2 months. He put hundreds of millions of dollars into this failed cause, lost all of his money within weeks. He is known to spend big. He has the money. This man truly is one of the richest people in this country. So why could he not afford to pay Sebastian Aho $42 million? A star, a generational talent, one of the best players in the National Hockey League, someone who is fast, someone who can score, someone who put up 30 goals, 53 assists, 83 points in a full, keep in mind, full 82-game season. Doesn't get injured, he's aggressive, he's determined, he is a star. So why? Why would Mark Vergevin, the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens, think to himself for a second that for $8 million a year, $2 million more per year than Tyler Myers just signed, why would he think that that would get Tom Dundon to lose his star player? The Hurricanes need their star. He brought them so much success, more than they've had in 10 years. For those of you who forgot, the Carolina Hurricanes swept the New York Islanders, beat the defending Stanley Cup champions, and fell to the Boston Bruins, perhaps the best team in the playoffs. They were a machine, a tank, and that was with being $20 million under the salary cap. They had the money for Sebastian Aho, and they were going to pay him. And Mark Bergevin made life easier for the Hurricanes. Aho wanted 5 years, $9.5 million, which not to mention is a very low request. This kid is a star, and $9 million for someone who can change your team, not the biggest ask. So first, he doesn't want a lot of money. He wants $9.5 million. Obviously, this is a lot of money in our real-world terms, but in the hockey salary cap, for those of you who don't understand, $9.5 million isn't a lot when you have $14.75 million committed to JT Miller, Tyler Myers, and Michael Ferland. This is all relative. So in the hockey world, Sebastian Aho at $9.5 million is a steal. And Montreal thought, let's negotiate him down to under the $8.4 million threshold, so we'll only have to give up a first, second, and third if Carolina declines to match. What a weird choice here, because for one, Carolina never would not match that. So Montreal is just delaying the inevitable, giving up their cap space to sign other free agents. So what do? Montreal loses this player, Carolina matches, and they go to their backup plan, Ben Chariot, a bottom pair defenseman making $3.5 million per year. I'm sorry, but Montreal really did not do the entire NHL a favor. As Sean McIndoe said on our last episode, the offer sheets that we have in the NHL are a misunderstood concept. Teams are scared of them, and now you have a messed up one that did not affect anything, did not do anything. Will teams think that offer sheets are effective? I hope so, because this was not the way to do it. Teams in the future need to overpay for these restricted free agents, make the team not match, and give up some picks. If you want a star young player, you're going to have to pay up. And a team that did pay up for a player they wanted, that's the Buffalo Sabres signing Marcus Johansson to a 2-year, $9 million contract. This contract isn't long-term. It's not too cost-punishing. And Marcus Johansson is a really good player. He fills a desperate need for the Sabres on the wing. Unlike the last two moves we talked about, this one makes a lot of sense. Johansson lining up next to Charlie Coyle and right winger Danton Heinen for the Bruins basically rode them to the Stanley Cup. Boston was not getting any scoring from their top six forwards, and it was Marcus Johansson who was filling in. In the playoffs, he had 11 points in 22 games. That's 40 points over a full game season. That is worth $4.5 million. Marcus Johansson obviously has been dealing with some concussion issues, some injury issues, but when he's under the right situation, like he was with Barry Trotz, like he was with Bruce Cassidy in Boston, this kid is a star. He's not much of a kid anymore, but he's a young player with a lot of talent who can help your team. At the moment, it seems like Johansson's going to slide in next to star young player Casey Mittelstadt and possibly Connor Sheary or Sam Reinhart or a veteran on the right side. This gives Buffalo flexibility. They've been struggling for years. They have a top six now. Buffalo might not win the Stanley Cup next year, but on paper, the expectations aren't huge. They're not there. I think that you have a team that can do something. Are they going to make the playoffs? I don't know. But will they contend for the 9 or 10 seed? Hopefully. And this Marcus Johansson signing could put them over the edge. Nick Cousins, another player that I really like, signed a one-year contract with the Canadiens this week. And this is one I want to focus on because Nick Cousins, for those of you local listeners from Hunterdon County on the Hunterdon Chamber Radio, Nick Cousins is a local boy. He played for the Lehigh Valley Phantoms in Allentown, and he was one of their star players. He has developed from local areas, and this kid is a stud. The Canadiens signed him to a one-year, one-way contract. He's 25, and he spent the last two seasons playing in the desert in Arizona. And Nick Cousins, this man is not your normal $1 million per year Ross Johnston type player. This kid can score. 20 assists, 27 points in 81 games last year. That was in a fourth-line center role before injuries to Arizona. Nick Cousins is a really solid kid, a really good player. He's good off the ice. He's maintained friendships, including one with Max Domi, since they were close at Grand Canyon State. Nick Cousins is a good person in the locker room. He comes from humble upbringings and truly wants nothing but the best for himself, for his team. And given the proximity of Belleville to Montreal, where Cousins is from, Cousins actually will have family at almost all games. And I want to highlight this because this is just a basic psychology thing. When you have your parents at every game, when you have your family at every game, you're not just playing for yourself. You're playing for the logo on the front and the name on the back. You want to impress your family, and Nick Cousins will do that. He will have his family there almost every game, and he will play better because of it. Nick Cousins, you might not know his name, but you should, because he is someone that can break out next year. All-Star game? Who knows? Maybe not. As we said about Marcus Johansson, maybe not comes up a lot on this show because we're just doing projections. But if I had to make a guess, expect a breakout year from Nick Cousins. We talk restricted free agents. We talk the salary cap. But do not go away because an expert in the field will be joining us to expand on what we've spoken about. When we return, Jonas Siegel will return to break things down. From the destination of all things hockey, we will be right back.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. Really excited for this interview. Going to be a unique one. Welcome Jonas Siegel to the show.
Hey, how are you?
I am doing great. Thank you. How are you today?
Excellent. Thank you.
So you cover the Toronto media, certainly an interesting territory there. Just how dominant is journalism in the area?
How dominant is journalism? Well, you know, Toronto is, I think it's now the third largest media mecca in North America in terms of population. You take the entire city area. So, you know, in a given day, you know, you've got two all-sports radio stations, you've got umpteen TV station, you've got, you know, Sportsnet and TSN, you've got the Globe and Mail has somewhat of a sports presence left, then you have the National Post, the Toronto Sun, the Toronto Star, a gaggle of folks from other outlets, including The Athletic. So, you know, from a sports media perspective, it's busy. I think, you know, when you talk to athletes and you listen to athletes, and certainly in the NHL, other sports, their locker rooms or clubhouses or whatever they may be called are a lot fuller with local reporters in Toronto than they are in some of the other outposts. So I think it's a busy city, and you know, everyone's trying to get the story first. So I think, you know, it's active. How's that for an answer?
So just how does having that sheer quantity of journalists, how does that affect the coverage?
Certainly nothing goes left unnoticed. You know, you have to ask yourself, is more necessarily better? I think that, like all things, it evolves through time, and I think, you know, there was an older standard of journalists throughout the last X number of years, and despite the medium taking a bit of a hit, there's now a younger group kind of coming in and taking things over. And in a lot of respects, it's good to see a lot of women coming into the business. So things are changing. I think that different outlets, remember that, you know, in Toronto especially, the Raptors, Blue Jays, and Maple Leafs, as well as the soccer team and the CFL football team, are all owned by Rogers and or Bell, who owns TSN. So from a TV perspective, the bigger networks are now all owned. The teams are now all owned by the networks, which has the potential for some conflict of interest. So the fact that there's other non-owned, team-owned entities there is good as well.
So a theme that we covered last week on the show with Darren Millard was hockey dominating Canadian coverage. Why is hockey so dominant up north?
I think it's in our roots. I think Canadians grow up playing hockey. I think until recently, it was the number one sport being played by kids in the streets. It was the thing to do. It was almost culture, dare I say, religion. No matter where you are in the country, you have a team. Where your parents were from, where your friends were from, there's always that Canadian rivalry. It's just the fabric of Canadians to gather around and be involved in and or play hockey. You know, why exactly that is, I don't know. You know, until 77, when the Blue Jays came to Toronto, we really only had the Maple Leafs. We had the Argos football. The Raptors didn't come along till the mid-90s, so there's been a gap. There still is no NFL team. So hockey has been it. Conversely, I could say, why does Portland, love basketball so much? Well, the only team they have there is the Trailblazers, right? So I think it really depends on what's in your backyard. I mean, Montreal had the Expos late in the 60s, I believe it is, earlier 70s. But Canadians grew up with hockey and played hockey and still do to this day. The difference is that with the Raptors having just dominated, basketball is much more front of mind than hockey right now.
A unique yet polarizing popular hockey figure is Don Cherry, and he has made some headlines recently. What's the situation with him?
Well, nobody really knows. So Steve Simmons of the Toronto Sun writes a column every Sunday. If you're in sports, and certainly in Canadian sports, and sports media, it is the column that everyone likes to read every Sunday, kind of the things he's thinking and the things he's hearing and seeing. And we'd been hearing on our site, Toronto Sports Media, that, the NHL deal has become a massive albatross for Rogers. It's just flat out too expensive to make money. And a good chunk of the deal was, ironically enough, back-ended, so that the first couple of years of the deal were inexpensive. And that has led to numerous rumored and some factual headcount changes at Rogers to deal with the rising cost of the NHL cable package. The most talked-about hypothetical change has been Don Cherry. In his 80s, clearly an icon. He is as divisive as they come in sports, certainly in Canada, maybe in hockey. People either love him or hate him. Anyways, he has been rumored to be on the cutting room floor, so to speak, for months. I'll be honest, I didn't really believe it. I certainly didn't believe that they would cut him and not give him the opportunity to do one last game or at least to do one more tour throughout Canada or something. We sat on it because we didn't have anything concrete. And then Steve Simmons, in his column this past Sunday, basically said that no one from Rogers has acknowledged that the coach's corner contract is up and has not yet been renewed for the coming season, which leads people to believe that Don Cherry could end up, as some other big names have, not returning next season. Well, Don Cherry immediately started using his political clout and started reaching out to some pretty powerful folks to get word out there that this is a hatchet job. He's very saddened to hear of this, and that Rogers executives have been telling him it's not true, which is all fine and dandy. The CP, the Canadian Press, which is the equivalent of the AP, the Associated Press, ran a story interviewing Don where Don comes out and says, I've been told by the head of the network that I will be back next year, that this isn't true, not to worry about it. And when they reached out to Sportsnet, which is his boss, for a comment, they received a no comment. And so Don Cherry is out there telling the world not to worry, everything's going to be fine. Yet those that sign the paychecks every week have only said no comment. So until somebody on the ownership side, if you will, or on the network side, is willing to put his or her name to a comment that says, yes, I can confirm, Coach's Corner with Don Cherry will be back, all things are up in the air right now. And Don Cherry is using his weight, as he has in the past, to get even the premier governor, if you will, of the province of Ontario to say how happy he is to hear that Don Cherry will be back for another season. And yet, nobody from the network has said anything. And it just seems very suspicious to me that it would be very simple from someone from the network to answer in the affirmative that he will be back if, in fact, that's going to be the case. So, long-winded answer, I apologize, but that's where things stand as of today. last I've heard, which is as of 15 minutes ago, not one single person from Sportsnet or Rogers has publicly been willing to say that Don Cherry will be back. So I think until that happens, speculation is fair game.
But here's the weird thing, and this is what just confuses me about this crazy situation. Hockey Night in Canada tweets out, despite rumors, Don Cherry to remain host of Coach's Corner. How does that make you feel? Well, for first of all,
let me interrupt you for just 1 second. If you look carefully, there's a link to that story. The link is to the CBC story, which is really a CP story. And it's the same story where Sportsnet says no comment.
So what how is this being in the world where we know a lot of stuff, Twitter, we seem to kind of know what's going on most of the time. Why is this being thrown under the rug? Is it because of just his controversy, some of the stuff he said? Or is this truly just no one knows what's going on and they're debating? I mean, why is this situation so misled and so much news out there going out that has misleading headlines and confusing storylines?
So, listen, I'm not there, so I can't tell you why anyone is or isn't doing what they're doing. I can tell you that there has been a ton of internal debate at Rogers as to whether they should bring Don Cherry back or not. Lots of people acknowledge that it was not a good season for him. He is getting up there in years. His act is getting a little bit tired. He's certainly not relevant to a younger audience. And he makes a lot of money. On the flip side, there are at least a couple of advertisers who advertise on the show, I've been told, exclusively to be part of his program because their product sells exclusively to his audience, which is typically older white men. So I'm sure there is an internal battle of do we tick off one or two sponsors and do the right thing, or do we need to save money? I mean, I think that's really the internal battle. And it would be, all I can tell you, and you know this, right? It would be very easy for somebody in a position of power to go on a TV show, a radio show, on Twitter, issue a public press release, talk to a reporter, and say, we are thrilled to have Don Cherry come back for his X number of seasons with Hockey Night in Canada. We can't think of a better way, whatever. But nobody's doing it. So, again, in the absence of information, there is all kinds of rumor and innuendo floating around. And Don can get whoever he wants to congratulate him publicly. But unless they work for Rogers, the ones that sign the check, I, for one, am not believing it.
So a situation with a lot of unknowns, but one thing that is known is that the Toronto Maple Leafs are in a salary cap crunch, and they need to sign Mitch Marner. How do you think the situation will play out?
So, you know, as you and I have talked, I am not a hockey expert. I don't play one on TV, and I don't profess. I am merely a fan. How do I think it's going to play out? I think what's more incredible is how it's already played out.
Exactly.
You know, especially in the media. I think we live, and I don't want to cross sports too much, but Toronto and Canada just completely lived through this entire, Kawhi Leonard dating love affair post-championship, where literally everybody and their mother had an opinion and an inside source chasing airplanes and helicopters and what have you, right? And I think what came out of that is some nexus of media members being used or making bleep up because nobody really knew what was going on. And you just have to wonder what's going on here with Mitch Marner. You know, Toronto-based boy, born and raised in the city, loves the city. I'll probably take a lot of crap for saying this, but he pretty much is the face of the franchise because he is a Toronto boy, right? He's got tons of endorsement. He's a good-looking kid. He scored, 90-plus points, plays the game hard, doesn't embarrass the team, all the things that you would want. And more importantly, for the first time, perhaps in my lifetime, drafted by and playing for the home team. That doesn't happen very often in Toronto. So all of the ducks are in a line for a deal to be signed. You know, my read, and I don't know this, but my read from afar is you've got a kid who's got influence from an agent and a father, and who is unfortunately living under the shadows, or at least under the wing, of Auston Matthews. And there's some, sounds like there's some hurt feelings about contract status as it related to bonus payments or eligibility of bonuses that he was told he couldn't have, that they in turn ended up giving Auston Matthews, you know, Willie Nylander holding out and getting money, Auston Matthews getting more money, and now nobody's ever really said what Marner wants. Everyone's, you know, hypothesized on what the number is, but nothing's really happened. Tons of rumors over the last 7 to 10 days about an offer sheet being imminent, most notably from Lou Lamoriello, your team's general manager, former general manager of the Maple Leafs. But as of right now, nothing's happened. We sit here today on, I think it is the 10th. It is the 10th of July. I'm not saying he hasn't had an offer sheet put in front of him, but he certainly hasn't signed one. So it's, you know, there's an Instagram post today of him on a wakeboard behind a ski boat. So it looks like he's having a good summer to me. I think we all know one thing. He's going to get paid. I think it's just a matter of exactly how much and when.
The Maple Leafs have been doing something, however, and that's addressing other parts of their roster rather well, might I add. Cody Ceci was signed to a one-year deal valued at over $4 million. Alex Kerfoot was signed to be a third-line center replacing Kadri for a $3.5 million a year contract. This is not a little bit of money. The Maple Leafs are contributing heavy contracts to other roster players that could be depth. How does that affect Mitch Marner when the Maple Leafs are giving out
so
all
as
these
I understand
contracts?
Things, again, this is more, you know, based on what I've read and heard. You know, they had a massive cap crunch. And what they have done is redistributed their assets. So, you know, where they were very deep at center, they moved Kadri, they brought in a right-handed defenseman, which is something they drastically needed. So they've just reallocated funds, and not only that, in shipping out Patrick Marleau and one other guy whose name is completely escaping me right now. They saved a ton of money. So they've opened up the cap space that they need, and as we're sitting here, again, July 10th, there's lots of room for maneuvering. I don't think the actual number is all that relevant in terms of cap space to get Marner. The question is, where does he fit in the world of Auston Matthews and Willie Nylander and others, right? So I think that's what I would imagine that Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas and the whole team there have, a low range and a high range where they want him to fit in, and it's just a matter of who's going to blink first.
Nikita Zaitsev, the player, moved out to Ottawa, and a lot of players moved out. Some moved in. We talked about a few of them. One I personally really like, and that's Jason Spezza, coming home on a one-year, $700,000 contract, which the Maple Leafs can afford. How do you think he fits in as a possible replacement at the center position?
So the older guy, listen, I'll admit I am a huge Spezza fanboy. Like when he first broke into the league and hockey cards were still a thing. I don't think they are still a thing, by the way, are they?
They are.
They were then. I had all of his rookie cards.
Wow.
I was a big fan. Listen, I think he is I think this is more, in my opinion, more of a character ad. This replaces Patrick Marleau, a little bit of the void in the locker room. I think whatever they get, you know, people are saying that he's got lots to prove because of how things ended up with him in Dallas. That's fine. I think whatever they get from him is fine. It gives Mike Babcock some veteran leadership in a team where it is clearly needed, having been bounced, you know, in the first round of the playoffs several times. To me, this is, you know, for the amount of money they're talking about, it's a no-brainer. If at the end of the day he becomes the story, certainly as playoffs come, the Maple Leafs are in trouble, right? Like if it's not Marner's, Matthews, and the other kids really driving things, I think the Maple Leafs are in the same trouble they were in last year.
Another thing causing trouble in it is in regards to Mitch Marner's situation. You would probably know more about this than a lot of people. And this is leaks from Mitch Marner's camp. And this has been a huge issue for all sides. Crazy speculation going out there. And a lot of it is seemingly coming from Marner and his party. How do you think this is affecting the contract negotiations when one side is spilling out so much details?
It's interesting, again, just listening to various people in the last couple of weeks talk about the Leonard stuff and other signings and other ongoings. And Kyle Dubas was on, he made the rounds last week after the big trade on the sports talk shows in Toronto. And he was saying that during the Tavares dating, if you will, a year ago, and when they were trying to bring Mike Babcock to Toronto, they really used to get a kick as to listening to media speculation as to what was going on, because so much of it was just total crap. You do have to ask yourself, when stories of an imminent offer sheet come out, you know, in the media, and you know this as well, if a scribe gets a story from someone, the number one question to ask is, why is this person telling me the story?
Exactly.
You know, is it for their own personal gain? Is it for a favor they want back? You know, why am I hearing this? And am I prepared to be used or to be the spokesperson of, or the messenger of this message, if you will? In my opinion, and I wrote this on Twitter, I think, yesterday or the day before, I think these leaks are definitely coming from the Marner camp. I think they are trying to put pressure on the Maple Leafs to get him whatever that magic number is that he's looking for. And based on what I heard from Kyle Dubas, I just think that it's in one ear and out the other ear. I think they've done their homework. I think they have a management team in place that knows the cap and how to work it. And I think they're going to hold fast. And realistically speaking, what are they supposed to do? I mean, you don't want to make a bad deal. They can set a deadline, but what happens if the deadline comes and they don't have a deal? Are they going to trade the guy? Are they going to tell him that if they don't have a deal by a certain date, they're not going to sign him? The process kind of needs to play out. I personally think he looks silly with these leaks because I think people know where it's coming from. And from what I'm told from various people, the feedback to these leaks have resulted in some pretty harsh and negative feedback to the player.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think he appreciates that, and I don't think he looks good, and I think he has to own it. And from everything that I'm kind of hearing second and third hand, they're recognizing it. And I think that's why it's kind of settled down, is that, you know, every time someone in that camp speaks up and the number gets pushed out there, the Toronto fan base is like, if that's really what he's going to sign for, let him go. We'll take the four first-round draft picks. And I don't think that does much to improve his ego.
Thanks, Paul, was trending on Twitter. That's what I thought of every time, you know, you mentioned that. It's hilarious the response he's getting, because you just see, thanks, Paul. People know where it's coming from. It's getting to be a little crazy now, especially when you have the Toronto Maple Leafs, such a prestigious organization. They don't deal with that type of stuff. So finally, before we let you go, a question not related to hockey. A year ago, John Tavares came home, and now Kawhi Leonard is going home himself. How is the city of Toronto dealing with losing one of their biggest stars?
You know, it's. I think the wound is still raw. Again, I think you know, from my perspective, there was so much noise, most of it, if not all of it, incorrect as to what was happening. You know, I think there's a faction of media and other personalities, including the head of the Raptors, basically saying, look, appreciate it for what we had. The guy came in, we got a championship, and he left. Be thankful for what we had. And then I think there's the same faction that there is in every sports fan. You know, fan is short for fanatic, and that's not necessarily a good thing. I think people are upset. I think people are pissed. I think people feel like they were duped. Like, you know, Toronto and Canada suffers from an inferiority complex anyways, and this doesn't do a whole lot to change that or to feed that in the opposite direction. So I think people are jaded. I think they feel spurned. You know what it tells me is there is no possible way the Raptors could have done anything differently to keep this guy. They built a team. They had a coach. They let him basically play when he wanted to play. You know, it was the perfect environment. He won. And he, not only did the team win, but he won the MVP. And it still wasn't enough. And they could have offered him the most money. So when you take all of those things and that wasn't of interest, clearly he didn't want to be in Toronto with the Raptors. And that's his choice. Like, forget going home or anything else. At the end of the day, he earned the right to become a free agent. He didn't ask to be to go to Toronto. He didn't sign a contract there and then refuse to play. He earned his free agency, and he decided to go somewhere else.
Well, that's how the league works. You covered extensively, especially on the media side, so thank you so much for providing that really cool insight, something we've never gotten before on the show. So that was Jonas Siegel. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks. Take it easy.
Of course. So when we return, Islanders prospect Felix Bibeau will be appearing on the show to talk about a variety of things, including his pursuit of the NHL dream, how he was drafted, and what it's like playing with star Islanders prospect Noah Dobson. From the destination for all things hockey, we will be right back.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. I am here with Islanders prospects, Felix Bibeau. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Of course. So let's start at the beginning. How did you get into hockey?
I started hockey when I was 4 or 5 here with my dad. My dad was passionate about hockey, and he really gave the passion to me, and I first started here in Mercier, where I'm from, and from there I went to the higher level after that, in the AAA, and then to junior. So, but when I first started, it was here in Mercier, and it's mostly because of my dad that I'm playing hockey today.
So is he your biggest role model in your hockey career?
Yes. You know, he didn't play at a higher level, but I think he's real passionate about hockey. Everything that he's doing in life, you know, he's going all in, and he's always working as hard as he can. So I think that's why he's one of the biggest role models for me.
And you have said that in your home there were no cartoons, just hockey. How did this lifestyle at a young age prepare you to be what you are now?
Like I said, I think I'm passionate about hockey, and it started when I was really young. You know, I remember that every morning it was Sports 30 here, and all the games, the hockey games were from the night before were on TV, so I could watch all the highlights and stuff. And I remember it was starting at 6 in the morning, and every morning I was waiting. My mom was telling me, wait till 6 to go watch the TV, and at 6 I was in front of the TV watching all the highlights from that 84. And you know, like I said, some kids, they're watching cartoons, but not me.
So what made you want to be a forward and not a defenseman or a goalie?
I don't know. I always been a forward all my life. I think the fun part of the game, I think, is to score goals, and when I was young, that's what I wanted to do, I think. And when I was maybe 5 or 6, because my dad was a defenseman, so I think I tried defense a couple of weeks, but I didn't like it as much as playing forward. So I think that's why I played forward, because, you know, the fun part of the game, obviously, is to score goals, and you have more chance to score when you're forward.
So now moving on to the present, what are you most excited about in your pursuit of the NHL dream?
You know, I'm really excited to, you know, it's, like I said, I didn't follow our normal path for a hockey player. Like, I always been, kind of under the radar a little bit. And, so I'm looking forward to do maybe the same thing, going pro or, you know, in a couple of years going in the NHL. You know, I'll work hard when nobody's looking, you know. I think that's what that's when you get better, when nobody's looking. And, that's what I'll try to do, and maybe, you know, one day play in the NHL.
So how cool of an experience was it to get drafted?
It was a great feeling, because I was here at home with all my family, and, you know, they did a lot of sacrifices for me during my hockey career, and, you know, to be with them, it was real fun, and it was a great night with them, and I was not expecting it really much, because you know, I'm 20 years old and it was my third year eligibility. So you know, when I got the phone call, you know, I was really happy, because like I said, you know, I was not expecting anything, because, you know, sometimes when you think let's say I'm gonna be drafted in the fifth round, and then you don't get drafted in the fifth round, and you start, you know, getting stressed or anything. But we were just having fun here watching the draft, and then suddenly we heard my name, so it was really a great moment.
Really cool. And then not just drafted by any team, drafted by Lou Lamoriello, Barry Trotz, and the New York Islanders, a world-class organization. Just how cool was it to hear that your name would be heading to the island?
Yeah, you know, I know that this franchise has a great history, and, you know, when I got drafted, I talked with the Quebec scouts here. And then I talked with Eric Kearns, and then I talked with Lou Lamoriello, and so it was, you know, it was something unreal. It was the first time that I was talking to Lou Lamoriello, and we all know what kind of guy he is and what he did in the past and everything. So I'm really happy to be an Islander.
And what advice did Islanders prospect Noah Dobson give you about the draft process?
You know, he just told me to stay the same person that I was. You know, don't try and change who you are. I think, you know, if they want to draft you, they're going to draft you for the person and the player that you are. And I think that the Islanders are doing it's really important for them to draft good people first. And if you do that, I think you have a better chance to have a good player in the future when you're a good person. And that's what Noah told me, to just be the same guy that I was in my junior career, you know, and just to have fun and don't be stressed about it.
Speaking of Noah, you've played with him. How much of a beast is this kid?
Oh, he's a machine out there. He was playing in every situation with us, and either on the power play, on the PK, 5-on-5, 4-on-4, 3-on-3, you know. He was on the ice most of the time, and he's just a smooth skater out there. He's efficient on the ice. He's not the guy who's going to move, like, too much. He's just going to be at the right place at the right time, and, you know, you can always count on him in the big moments, and I think he showed with us this year that why he was probably one of the best junior player in the country, and he was a beast, like you said.
So what are your expectations of Noah in the future with the Islanders along with you?
I think that Noah can, you know, can play in the NHL real soon. I think this summer he's going to have a great summer of training. Obviously, he's going to gain maybe 10, 15 pounds. And, you know, he, like I said, in the NHL nowadays, you have to be a good skater to play in the NHL. And he's the best skater that I've ever played with, you know. And he's a good person, too, like I said. Like, he's a great guy, fun to be around, you know. So when you draft good person first, then it's easier to make a good hockey player. And I think Noah's on the good way, and he's going to work hard this summer to crack the roster in the NHL.
Transitioning back to you, many draft analysts called you one of the hardest workers in the draft. How great of an honor is it to receive such high praise?
Oh, it's an honor because, you know, I take a lot of pride in working hard every day. You know, it's not only during the games that I work out that I work hard, but during practice or training, I try to always be work as hard as I can. And you know, it's a great honor. And like I said earlier, you know, it's my family that taught me all that. You know, the passion, the effort that you put into what you're doing, and it's really a part of my game that I'm proud. And like what I say usually is, you know, I'm like playing defensively and playing on the PK, it doesn't need any talent, you know. So I try to be really good in what doesn't need talent. So it's either face-offs, you know, playing a good defensive game, good in your D zone, and after that, I use my skills and my hockey IQ to be good offensively. But to be good defensively, you know, you just need to work hard and to want it more than the guy on the other side. So I think that's why. But it's a great honor, you know, to receive such a high praise like that.
Another one of the unique aspects of your game off the ice is you're always one of the first people at the rink and one of the last ones to leave. How important is this for you to stay on top of your game?
Oh, I'm just, I like to be, to go at the rink, you know. Sometimes you're there, you're just, you know, you're not doing anything crazy. You just see either a stretch or a video or, you know, but I like to be at the rink, you know. Because when you go back home, you don't have much to do, you know. But at the rink, I feel like I'm kind of home, and I sit there a lot of times, and I'm a guy that likes to prepare everything that I'm doing. So I'm gonna start, let's say, preparing my game 2 or 3 days before the game, you know. And so I've always been like that, and I'm gonna keep doing it for sure.
Communication is also key for you. Why is it so crucial to be always communicating with your teammates on the ice?
Oh, especially like us in the Memorial Cup or in the NHL, you know, it's so loud in those arenas that you need to talk a lot on the ice, because, you know, you need to help your teammates and you need to help yourself too, because if your teammates are talking to you, you're going to look way better. But it's not because of you, but maybe sometimes it's going to be because of your partner, you know. So it's a big key now in the NHL. It's always been, and every team that communicates will have success.
The Memorial Cup, a great part of hockey, and you scored 2 third-period goals, including the winner, to help the Huskies advance to the final. How much fun was that game?
It was a real pleasure to play. You know, we were there in Halifax, and we won our League Cup there, so we weren't, you know, the Halifax crowd was not on our side, and we were playing against a great team, Guelph, and coming into the third, you know, I think I stepped up my game with my line mates, and we played a great third period, and I was able to score 2 goals, and it was probably the biggest goals of my life. And you know, it was an NHL atmosphere there in the rink, especially in final against Halifax. You know, it was very loud, and you know, so it was kind of a little bit of a teaser, or just a not an NHL rink, but close to it, I think. And it was real fun to be a part of it.
In a crucial third period like that, how does your game change? Are you focusing, like you said, on your hard work and your effort, or are you trying to get to the areas that you can to score and really work on that offensive side of the game in third periods like that?
But I think you have to do the right thing, because when you're playing the right way, when you don't cheat, you know, you're a good defensively, like I said, and so when you do those things, sometimes, you know, you need luck to score, and you need sometimes just a bounce in it, and I think I was there at the right place at the right moment. But by doing the right thing during the game and during the tournament and the playoffs and the season, I think sometimes you get this rewarded for this, and I think it happens, and it was a great moment.
Both those goals coming from a very similar spot, almost an identical play, and they were crucial in helping your team win the Memorial Cup. How fun was that? How much of a special experience was it to win? No matter what level you're at, winning is crucial, and you had one of the greatest trophies in hockey, the Memorial Cup.
Yeah, it was a great feeling, you know, because like I said, we won the League Cup in Halifax. So coming back there 2 weeks later, you know, the crowd was not on our side, like we said. But I think we battled hard, you know, in the final we were trailing 2-0 after the first period. And, you know, everybody thought that it was over. But in our room, you know, we stick with our plan with each other, and we battled hard, and we came back in that game and finally won 4-2. And it was, you know, we realized after a month and a half, 2 months later, that, you know, we're going to be a brothers for life, like we're saying, and we're going to be a special group for the rest of our life. And, you know, I think it's one of the hardest trophies to win, because you have to win, you know, four best of seven series and then another tournament. So, it's a cup that is hard to win, and it's not every year that you can win it, so it was a real special moment.
How will you use that success as motivation when pursuing the NHL dream?
You know, it's when you win at whatever level that you win, I think you can bring it to the next level. That's what I did in the Midget Triple-A here. I won, and then, you know, you just sometimes you just learn a couple of things, and then you bring it to the next level. Even if, you know, it's not the same level. We all know that junior is not the same level than the NHL or AHL. But I think you just want to, you know, learn. I learned a lot this year, and I'll just try to bring that with me in New York. Yeah.
So finally, before we let you go, this offseason is an important one for all prospects, especially you. What goals specifically do you have for this offseason to work on?
This summer, you know, I'll try to get better at my skating abilities. My first three steps, you know, I want to be more explosive on the ice. So I'll work hard in the gym and on the ice to be faster in September. And, you know, if I do that, I think I'll be a better player. And like I said, I'm going to work really hard this summer. Even if I get drafted, oh, it's only the beginning of the path. And I just want to, you know, give it all I got this summer to reach my goals in the future. And, yeah, it's going to be a short summer. It's not very long because, you know, we played until June, but you know, I'll enjoy the summer, take some time off too, just off the ice for a couple of weeks in the next 2-3 weeks, just to think about something else, and then mid-July I'll go back on the ice and you know, be ready for September.
Well, good luck with that. That was Islanders prospects Felix Bebo. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks a lot.
That concludes another fantastic episode of Destination Hockey. It was an honor and a pleasure to speak to Felix Bebo, a really humble, good kid with a future in the NHL. You can catch us on Instagram at @drive4five, on our Twitter at @drive4five_, and on Facebook on the official Destination Hockey page. Facebook is up and working again, so you can be sure to check that out. Also, do you need tickets to any event? It could be a Broadway show, a concert, or a baseball or hockey game. If so, check out SeatGeek. It's the best way to get tickets, and you can use code DRIVE45, the same way it's spelled on all of our social media platforms, for $20 off your first purchase. The Islanders got their arena this week. Finally, some advancements in that, as Patrick Dowd said on the show a few weeks ago. Next week, we'll be talking about that and more. So from the destination for all things hockey, see you next week.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant.
I mean, my otherwise stable personality, low-key, that is just so level all the time, I become like a hot air balloon.
Oh,
and
yeah,
you can't bring me back down. Yeah.
What surprised you about doing the radio?
That it would be as fun as it is, mm-hmm. that it would be so enriching to my life, that it would give me an opportunity to share things that otherwise I couldn't share.